Welcome to The Last Detail, a thoroughly considered side quest. In this show, we chat with a distinguished guest about a single object that is meaningful to them. We dive deep into that object, discussing the design, the manufacturing process, the good, the bad, and everything in between. After all, good design is thorough, down to the last detail. Today's guests are Seiwei Wang and Taylor Levy, the duo behind CW&T, makers of beautifully designed and artful objects. Their objects are the Manfrotto Superclamp and the Casio F91W wristwatch.
Well, thanks for coming on this podcast, friends.
Thanks. Thanks for having
us. Hi.
I thought you'd never ask. I was like, when are they going to ask us to be on their podcast?
We had a tally going secretly, and you finally got enough points.
Thank you.
And then we said, okay,
we
it's time. Yeah. Let's see. We've known you guys for, dare say, I mean, I've known you longer, but damn, I mean, what, like?
2007.
Oof. 15 years at least.
That's a long
time. Oh, hachimachi.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, we've grown
it's
up.
Pretty crazy. I know we've grown up. We've done it all the time. Yeah. Well, today we have two of you on and two different objects. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be a new thing for us. But in general, we just usually start chatting about it. So I don't know, Dan, do you want to do any steering or any?
No, I mean, this is a first for us, having two guests on, talking about two disparate, unrelated objects. I'm excited to see how this goes. But you guys are special. This is a special case, so we're happy to do it.
I think there's some relationship.
Thank you for accommodating us.
Yeah,
this is also a last detail first. This is the first time someone has selected an object that has a Wikipedia subheading, usage and terrorism.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So congratulations on that, too.
That's also why we chose that, or that's why I like it.
Cool. Well, I think you're going first. So what object did you bring us today?
My object is the Manfrotto Superclamp.
Ooh.
Do you guys have these?
Ooh, I like it. It's silver, not black.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have one. I've used them before. Dan, you don't have one, do you?
I do not have one of these.
Oh, you guys got to get them.
Yeah, I know.
They're amazing.
We'll convince us why.
Yeah, tell you why.
Tell us about it and just kind of describe it for the listeners.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the history of this thing, but I think it's from the 70s. Manfrotto, maybe people already know, they make camera equipment like tripods and autopoles and various things around photography. And I think in the 70s, they designed this thing called the Superclamp. And it's essentially a C-clamp. I guess it's just like a fancy C-clamp, but it's designed to clamp around round objects, so poles. But you can also clamp around flat things, so like the side of a table or, I don't know, pretty much anything. And the really cool part about it, or the reason it works in the photography world, is because it has an opening on one end to insert, I don't know what they're called, but they're like these little...
Like those light stand...
Yeah, the light stand things. Knob. Yeah, studs. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which come in many different flavors. Like you can get them like... as a nipple, like back to back, or you could get them threaded quarter 20 or like whatever the next one up is. I forget what thread side that is, 3/8 something.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it also has threaded holes on that face. I think
four
these are
or one.
There's four.
That's threaded.
Threads.
Really?
Yeah. Good question. Some of them are threaded. No. Some of them aren't, I think.
It's probably for locking. It's probably for like locking at an angle. Like you could thread it and then there's a little pin that goes in there that keeps
it. Yeah, well, I use it to put super clamps back to back sometimes, 90 degrees to each other. So you can clamp onto one pole and then clamp onto another pole 90 degrees to it, kind of like how scaffolding joints work.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Like, this thing was designed in the 70s. It hasn't changed one bit. It is so robust. Like, I've lifted, you know, anytime we need to rig up camera equipment or lighting, the super clamp is like always where I start. Mm-hmm. Clamping things against other things. And I also just love like the appearance of it. Like, there's probably not a lot of attention paid to the way it looks, but coming from like an engineering perspective, it just forced it to look this way, and I like the way that it looks.
Do you think that the features on there, like every part of its form, has some use, basically? Is it like, oh, there's a weird notch here because actually you can use it in this way. Is that, yeah. Does it feel like it's that?
I think so. Yeah, definitely the clamping areas. You know, it's a cast aluminum piece. So there's probably some constraints coming out of that process.
Yeah.
You know, I think the main feature is like the C-clamp mechanism. So instead of having like a normal C-clamp, you're like spinning the threaded rod to move like a thing, like a plunger up and down. This is angular, you know, so it's more like clamping like a lobster claw.
Yeah.
And it has a really big knob on it that's different from a C-clamp. Like a C-clamp, you usually have like a little rod that's
like a little loose.
Yeah, and it's like not that easy to use. Super clamp has like this big lever that you can like twist really easily and get a ton of leverage on it to clamp stuff down. So yeah, we have a lot of these. And the cool thing is, because it's been around for so long, you can find them on eBay for like, you can buy like a whole lot of them for super cheap. So that's why we have like silver ones. We have some white ones and some black ones. I don't really care what color they come in because they all work the same.
Yeah, that is so nice that it just hasn't changed. And it's the kind of object where there'll be a production studio that probably buys a bunch. And then they're like, well, we don't need these anymore.
Right.
So they just sell like a lot of them or whatever, which is awesome.
Yeah. So for us, they're like cheap enough that we, you know, some of them are like permanently mounted in places because we have enough of them and they're so useful.
It's funny to me, though, because you guys both have a real of almost... or maybe literally anyone I can think of that I've ever known think more and care more about like objects than any person I know. Like, you what's the website? It was Good Ones or whatever is the website you have.
Oh, The Ones.
Yeah, The Ones. Yeah, where it's like, here, look, you're looking for a knife. Here's the one. We've like looked at the knives. This is the one. And so it was like kind of surprising to me that it's like, oh, here's this extraordinarily utilitarian object that is not like attractive or anything, but it is so
attractive,
useful.
Right.
Like, it's so clearly itself. It's like, what's this thing? Oh, it's like the glue. It's like just put stuff together.
I know. I was thinking about it when you guys asked to pick an object. I looked on The Ones and I realized actually a lot of the objects on there are not designy things. You know, they're not actually like high design object. A lot of them are tools or like things that are high function or like highly engineered, and the engineering is kind of pushing the aesthetic of it versus like, I don't know, other like consumer products are very can be pretty designy.
And
I didn't realize it until you guys asked that maybe I just don't I don't have like an appreciation for like designy objects. It seems.
Well, or would you say like style or like like a cultural axis or something, right? Where it's like, that thing has no cultural axis, right?
No.
Probably. It's like,
it's
like, guess
trendy.
What? This thing could still be itself in like 100 years from now because guess what? We're still going to need to put things together and this thing does that really well. So it's just interesting. You know, it is timeless, but it's timeless in kind of a different way than... like some chair or fork or something that just kind of has like resolved itself into like an icon. And then, so I don't know, that was just interesting to me, that this came up. And I think it's funny to say, knowing you well, it like suits, it also is not surprising because it like suits your, I don't know, you just have such a, like a practical approach to things. I think sometimes we're just like, does this work? Like, can we make sure this thing works, please? And I'm guessing that thing just always works, and it always is there, and it doesn't fail, and it doesn't break. And that is, like, I'm guessing, a lot of the appeal.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. There's also like a systems approach to this object, to the super clamp, that I really appreciate. Like, it's not that useful on its own. Like, yeah, you would never use it as a clamp in itself. It's really just a clamp to attach a whole world of other objects to it, like accessories and lights and all these other things. And I really, like, we've never, I don't think, designed a system like that, although I've tried many times to like come up with a structural custom structural kit system, you know, any kind of like system with many, many compatible parts. I think it's really hard to design and manufacture and get it out into the world. And so from that perspective too, I really respect that they managed to get it out there and it's still around and people still use it. And there's like the world of compatible parts keeps growing. And that to me is like very, very cool.
I just noticed something about this thing.
Huh.
Oh.
What? Also, I was thinking, I remember a conversation, Tom, that I had with you 17 years ago on the floor of ITP where we talked about connectors. And you were connections. That's the hardest thing in any project, making stuff stick together.
Never making your own connector.
Yeah. Never make your own connector. That's what you said to me. Because I think I was making my own connectors. And you were like, you're an idiot. Don't ever make your own connector. You remember that conversation?
Yeah, I do. That is like an axiomatic thing for sure that I still very much believe. And I think, at that time we were... It was all up for grabs. Like, yeah, make your own connector. But it's like, wait, no, this is not where truth lies. But I think it's crazy, though, because like almost certainly that could be improved, right? Like they made it in the 70s or whatever. Like you could improve it. And there must be so much resistance to doing that internally in the company and culturally because it's like everyone's relying on this. And I'm guessing a lot of them are grips, right? It's like production people grips. And they know how something works and they want to rely on just get the super clamps, order it, rent these super clamps and we're going to be fine, right? So it's like this, it's almost like infrastructure that you can't change. It's like, no, like do not mess with the super clamp. Like, could you imagine the revolt that happens if they changed? It would be like changing the thread on a camera from quarter 20. It's like, sorry, that's like never going to change, you know?
Yeah, that's never going to change.
Yeah.
I just noticed also, did you notice these holes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for a plug.
That you can open a plug?
Yeah, there's actually another piece so there's like a V groove so that it could clamp onto bars really nicely. But if you want to, technically, if you're clamping onto a flat surface, you don't want this V. So it comes with a plug that flattens that out. Mm. But I always lose it and you kind of don't need it. Like you don't have to have it.
I was going to ask about that. Like, what is the story with that plug? And does it have a place to like tuck or nestle on the clamp itself when you're not using it?
It does.
Nice.
So when you're not using it, it like snaps onto here, like onto the screw.
Okay.
Because it has like a little notch in it and you can press fit it on there. So they thought of it.
Thought of it all.
But I still lose it. So
yeah,
maybe it's not thoroughly considered.
So Taylor, you've been living with these things too. What's your like 30,000 foot view on these guys? Because you must use them all the time.
Yeah, I use them all the time. But you know what? Like rigging to me is like my biggest frustration. I always find that I feel like I'm maybe because I'm a girl. Like I'm kind of strong. But I always feel like I can't manipulate things as easily and as nimbly as Seiwei can, which leads to massive amounts of frustration. You know, like just the leverage of clamping something and trying to reach the thing, I'm just worse at it, I think, than you are. It sounds like so stupid and whiny.
Or like holding two things up at once and trying to like get it right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. The world wasn't built for me, unfortunately.
But you know, we have like, what's that thing called? We have this,
magic arm,
a magic arm that's attached to a super clamp, which is on a pole that I'm looking at right now on our little photo rig. And like, I hate that thing, even though it's super useful and I can't think of a better thing, but it's so hard for me to get it all the way tight and so hard for me to get it. You're laughing, but like,
you know, but also you hate everything.
I do hate everything. This assignment,
by the
way.
Taylor says I hate something.
This assignment was so difficult for me because I really don't like things. I think I did.
Yeah, you just
did. I made it go past its spring area. Yeah, I have a tendency to break things upon use because I don't.
So do you think,
I don't know.
Is there plastic versions of that thing, or is it all cast aluminum every time?
I think it's all, as far as I can tell, yeah, it's all cast aluminum. And there are like other, not knockoffs, but like other companies have made different versions of it, like smaller, I think, lighter weight versions. I haven't used them, but you know, same concept. So that also to me is like very appealing, that this idea was like strong enough and enough people appreciated that they're like, oh, I'm going to make like another version of this for like smaller poles or like smaller assemblies. Mm-hmm. And that's also taken off and has its own world of accessories.
It's funny, like, you know, tripods are like very similar where you keep, it's like you think a cheap tripod's going to be okay, but it's really not okay. And it's like, I think it's just because, I guess with photography or whatever, you just want it to be stable. It's just really got to be tight. And for things to be that way, they got to be made out of really tough materials and everything's got to be correct. It's like this like deceptively hard problem of like, no, this really has to clamp and be tight and like strong enough to where if you do clamp something, it doesn't break. It's like this really thing. And so I wonder if it's like, does that, you know, if you think about the last 50 years or whatever, you know, everything else has gotten like smaller and lighter and sleeker and everything. And then there's like this photography equipment that's still like the same kind of, I mean, sure, like maybe carbon fiber, you like it got that way a little bit, but in general, it's like, no, we still need these huge heavy metal things to connect this stuff. And that's like interesting. It's like, of like almost anything, I feel like I could predict that in 50 years that might be the same. Because what would change?
Yeah, you don't want to make it lighter weight. Like we just invested recently, maybe a year ago, we bought like a camera stand.
Like a used one that goes,
you know, so it's like for studio purpose only.
Yeah, like the pole with the two poles.
Yeah.
Like the 90 degree thing. Yeah.
Yeah, heavy, you know, cast steel base, you know.
It's very,
the
very
pole, like the vertical pole is like a hexagon that's like 6 inches in diameter. It's like very heavy duty. Yeah, you cannot, you know, it's not meant to go outside the studio, but for studio purposes, it's like, it just makes like a world of a difference. Everything is like, it has a counterweight on it, so you can like move up and down really easily.
Yeah, and it's smooth, right? So it's not just that it's like skookum or tough, it's like, it moves easily and you can have minute adjustment. And I'm guessing that Super Clamp, I mean, I've used them before, it feels the same way where it's like also precision in a way where like you feel like you can dial in the grip force of it, right? It's not like a chintzy, like tweaky. It's like, no, I can really.
Yeah.
I mean, we all both know, both these companies here make objects that are kind of do that where it's like, this has got to be kind of like refined feeling and nice, but also tough. It's like this weird middle ground where it's like you want simple, tough, durable, but also refined and kind of there's a sense of precision involved. And obviously, we both know that's like the hardest thing to do. But it feels so good when you nail it because it's like, okay, this is like here now. This can like stay this way, basically.
Right. Yeah. Photography in general, I always think about being so interesting and it being, we basically figured it out and we're kind of stuck against like physical limitations now where it's like, if you look at photography, you know, 50 years ago, 70 years ago, yes, we transitioned from film to digital and there's all kinds of, you know, autofocus and huge advantages of that. But like the lenses are basically the same size they've always been. Like the way the light is going to enter and then bounce off these lenses and hit the sensor or the film. It's like, we figured that out and that's like settled. It seems like that's basically what it's going to be. And yes, we have smartphone cameras now, which are, you know, much smaller, but they're doing these other things, but still just like a big camera with a lens. It's like, that's pretty much the same. So same with like these tripods. It's like, yes, you can make it lighter, but it actually kind of needs to be big and heavy to be stable. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's so interesting, especially when you follow kind of like Apple and all this computer stuff and everything's getting smaller and faster. And then to move to this other thing where it's like, oh yeah, we've kind of figured that out in the 50s or so. And and just, I mean, same with like guitar. I've been like getting back into guitars. It's like, oh yeah, that is like, got figured out and then just kind of stayed the same.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
It reminds me of just like, you know, when you see those like iPhone videos even made by Apple where it's like, here's a pro like person making a movie with an iPhone. It's like there's this little tiny iPhone and then there's this huge aluminum rack and like huge hand, like this huge metal like 100-pound rig that they have this little iPhone on. And it's like, yeah, because you want this kind of, I don't know, this like grip culture of like, we need this to be rock solid. We need it to be like, there's this like kind of hacky, modular, make it work attitude in, I think, I'm guessing in like fear of grip, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, we need to like rig this to this and do all this. That's like such a, I just thought there's like a, not a lot of that around anymore. Yeah. I feel like this kind of, you know, like when are you doing something really high tech? Like filmmaking is like, so high tech in a lot of ways, and yet it's also hacky. I'm guessing it's very like practical and like, oh, let's put this light up here. I'm sure if you're on set in some even really huge production movie, there's all kinds of weird stuff going on that the grips are like rigging up or whatever. And so that's like, I don't know. There's something about that feels so nice.
There's also something, Dan, you're saying like about lenses and how like lenses have been the same. That's making me wonder, like, part of why that works is because, you know, there's like physical principles at play. Yeah,
physics is
that you
involved.
Can't, physics is involved. You can't fuck with physics. And I'm wondering if there's like, you know, if there are ways to design objects from the ground up, from first principles, so that you end up with a thing that's like, oh, that is the solution. We solved it. And that's it, you know, like the guitar and like all these other objects, like instead of like going through infinite iterations and trying so many things, like could you just like go from first principles and just like arrive at the perfect design that you never have to mess with again?
Yeah, I wonder if all this new, like AI, you know, I think it's unclear how like AI generated stuff is going to really interface with design, you know. And I wonder if that, you know, this kind of first principles physics stuff will be, you know, my fantasy is like, hey, I want to make a click mechanism on this pin, AI, like design it for me. And then you would imagine that it would approach it in a like first principles kind of way where it's like, I'm not cribbing on some other thing. I'm like, no, here's how we have to do it. And that could be really interesting. It also makes me think
I think it'll get there.
It must. I mean, think it will. But it's like, what is that going to mean? Like, how do we interface with that? It reminds me of like SpaceX and Tesla. I think the reason why Elon Musk is so able to kind of do this revolutionary stuff is because he approaches design and product that way, where he's like, don't tell me what's possible from this like linear progression. We start over and it's like, can you prove that this works from a first principles, like physics is like, where is the ceiling on physics? And then we're going to do that because physics says it's allowed. And so we're just going to go straight to it. And it's like really interesting to like think about things that way.
Yeah. I would like to approach things that way more, but I just don't have enough physics knowledge. Think that way.
Yeah. And I would imagine that it, like, it makes a lot of sense for, like, rockets or electric cars, but maybe for, like, a clamp, it's not useful or something. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Right, Yeah, I wonder.
Well, I think we should probably, should we do, like, the pick the Dieter Rams thing for
sure. This? Well, before we get to that segue, I was wondering, do you have any nitpicks with this clamp? Like, is there anything you would tweak about it or change about it?
I don't know specifically what I would change. But the thing that does frustrate me sometimes is the connection to the, I forget what this is called, but the little hole that you plug stuff into, like all the accessories. it's designed with a quick release. So there is this like lever button that you can push to like quickly get something in there. It's still loose, so you can spin it. And then it has another thread to that thumb screw that you could turn to lock it in. Mm-hmm. And that interface isn't great. Like, yeah, it's not clear
like
when something is like locked in or not.
So it's not really a safety like on a gun or something where it's like binary. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be, you know, I think these like nub things that you plug in have an undercut. So when you like press it in, it's supposed to stay in, but it's, you know, you can't really press it in. You kind of have to push the button, put it in and then release the button. Mm-hmm. So it's not, yeah, it's not like a great experience using it. I think it could be improved. So yeah, that would be like one huge improvement that could happen.
Yeah, some kind of like where you just push it in and then you can't get it out and then you can tighten it. Yeah, like a really binary, like boom.
This confuses me too. This is going to be really stupid. But I don't know why. Like, this is so dumb. But when I look at that hexagon shape, see that opening? You actually can't really tell that it's a hexagon. It kind of looks like it could be an octagon because where those...
Yeah, it does look like,
And so when you initially go to put the hexagon in, you're like, wait a second. You know, sometimes my eye always goes to that flat and I align the flat of this with this and it never fits. And it's so stupid.
What are those flat protrusions for? Like you can put like a flat object in there or something, or what are those?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like a bar,
No, I think it's just part of the casting. It's maybe they had to cast it that
way. No, you can have a flat. You know, why doesn't it flat to the hexagon? Yeah, it's like a little notch for some weird reason. Yeah, maybe there's some other accessory that I don't know about that can go in.
I bet there is. Like you can put like a rectangular bar in there or something in it. Like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
See? We're just not pros.
Yeah, we're not pro enough.
Well, so Dan, do you want to do
Dieter Rams? We can enter the Dieter Ram corner for the first time. Did you think of a principle you think is best?
For this thing?
Yeah, I think the principle that I think I value most out of this is good design is long lasting. I think, which is something that we also, as a practice, just naturally gravitate towards. Like we want things to last for a long time. And, you know, I think the best designs don't change over time. Like literally, like in production, you know, maybe it's like their 10th year in production and they're just, there's nothing to tweak anymore. Like I think those designs are quite amazing, and the Super Clamp definitely is in that category. And we aspire to make products that are also in that category.
Like done, like finished, kind of.
Finished. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. There's no more tweaking left to do.
Yeah. No, that feels right. I don't know, Taylor, do you have one for this or do you wait for yours?
Oh, do I have a which principle? No, I don't have a principle.
She doesn't care about the Super Clamp.
No, I love the Super Clamp. I think it's great. It's the best part of our photo setup is the Super Clamp. But I really don't like everything else. I do like our backdrop.
Yeah,
long lasting, I definitely bulleted that one. I'll say makes a product useful, which obviously seems obvious. But this, I think this is an interesting object, as we spoke about before, where it's kind of nothing on its own. Like it's a connector, it's an adapter essentially. Like all it's doing is putting object A with object B. And so like, obviously it has to be useful because that's its only purpose is to, to be used to do something else, you know, to connect two other things together. So this is, it's kind of the epitome.
But can a product be not useful?
Yeah.
Sure.
Or less useful. Course.
Yeah, or like less useful. Yeah, like less useful. Yeah.
It's also good design is as little design as possible for this one, I think, goes well.
True. Yeah, there's no like ego in this thing.
No.
It's clear that it's driven by these like constraints, and there's no ego in like, oh, let me make this, you know.
He stuck his fingers now.
It only has like radiuses on it, so like no one's hands get cut or something. You know what I mean? Right. It's like yeah. so.
it's no, like even just like this off the shelf like washer, like boom, uh-huh. that thing goes in there, mm-hmm. or like this nut that's like boom, that thing fits in there. It's all very generic and scrappy. Yeah.
What do you think of like the affordances on it? Is it very kind of intuitive and self-explanatory? Like, oh, obviously you turn this to tighten this, or is there some learning when you first get it of, oh, how do I open the clamp? Oh, I have to do this. Or is it like so dead obvious in its
implementation? Yeah, I think it's super obvious. Like the arm, the thumb screw for the main clamp is so big. Mm-hmm. That's part of its design, and yeah, I think you can't mistake it for mm-hmm. what it is, what it's supposed to do. Like even the shape of this, yeah, like it's not a symmetrical thumb screw. It's like
oh, yeah, at
it's
all, right?
Why?
Yeah,
I guess because your thumb goes in some hole.
It's easier to tighten than it is to loosen.
Right. Yeah.
In theory,
it gives your thumb more. Like a more of a groove in the tightening orientation than uh-huh. the loosening orientation. Huh. So yeah, even that they thought of, which is
yeah, cool. Maybe so that you can like just grab it and you, if it's in the dark and you have a weird angle or upside down, you don't have to think about it. It's just like, oh, I know that right. this turns.
Right, yeah, it makes you want to turn in that direction.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I pick good design is useful, makes the product useful as well. And for me, I think the thing that I just keep imagining some grip or some like production person being like, okay, we're going to go on a shoot in Africa. And the fact that you know that like super clamps are there and that you can just say, I want a super clamp and you can depend on it. It's like Scotch tape or something. It's like,
right.
It must be like quite the security blanket to be like, ah, just get like 100 super clamps. We'll be fine. And like, that is like, there's something so comforting about that, especially if you're like doing things around the world. Like what? I mean, you can depend on like, oh, I know that it just get this tripod or whatever, cause it's going to connect to my camera. Right. But there's so few things that you can depend on like that in the world, you know, where you're just like, just get those. It'll be cool. And so I think that kind of, it is just so incredibly useful and like dependable that I don't know, that must be like really nice. I wish we could talk to like a grip or someone, because I'm sure that they would like echo this, like, oh yeah. Unless who knows, maybe there's like a grip yelling at us somewhere that's like, oh no, those are sucky ones. Maybe there's these way better ones to do or whatever. We're all like nostalgia about this.
That'd be funny. Yeah. We should ask this time.
Yeah,
we should. It's a super pro.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's about you guys. It's about you, so it doesn't matter.
Right. That's true.
Cool. Well, here, Taylor, let's move on to what would you like to introduce your object that you have brought to this party?
Sure. I have a Casio F91W. It's that classic black digital Casio watch that was first designed in, I think, 1989. So it's gone unchanged since then as a piece of electronics. That's my object. I actually don't have, we usually have these, but I only have a disassembled one right now.
Yeah.
I don't have an actual one, which kind of sucks. But hold on, I can take the.
So for you, when you think about this object, is it always black in your mind, and is the black the only one that matters, or is it, what part of it is it kind of for you?
For me, the part of it that's it is the movement.
Okay.
And the electronics.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's so few things that exist today that have been, you know, especially technology-wise that involve electronics and involve digital electronics that have lasted for that amount of time, because there's been so many advances and changes over the last 30, 40, 50 years. I can't really, I didn't try to think about this, but I can't really think of anything that's so ubiquitously used today that has gone unchanged since 1990.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's really, there's a lot of things. What?
No, I said there's not going to be a lot of things. Yeah. You know, like if there are some other things, it's not going to be very many of them.
Yeah, yeah. Electronic so still wise.
In production.
Yeah, still in production. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's just remarkable. Like this little thing is something to be celebrated.
How much of that is, again, this question of they nailed it, or it's like a cultural thing that just people are getting it because of the like nostalgia patina on it, and like it's this kind of, it's obviously iconic, like crazy iconic. So do you have a sense of like how much of its kind of continued success is like a cultural thing, or does it does it do something that is like that just other things don't do?
It doesn't do anything that other things don't do. You know, other things do this thing perfectly fine. I do think it's a cultural thing also. And I also think that, you know, if you look at this, it's definitely not the best design thing in the world as like an object. You know, like material wise, like this band, it's not super nice. But at the same time, like, it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that does have to do with culture. And it just, like, it sort of surpassed, like, even being evaluated in terms of design. It just became its own thing. It became its own icon, its own object. Mm-hmm. And it's just taken at that. And
yeah, maybe. I'm thinking about, like, our kids, though. Like, our kids haven't been introduced to this whole world of like watch design and, you know, that entire universe. And when they see this watch, they're like, cool, that's a cool watch. And so I think there is something in there. There's, you know, I agree. Like, it's not like a super well-designed thing, but that maybe that's part of it. It's like not trying to be flashy. It's not trendy. It is just a digital watch. And I think, I wonder if you were to design, again, going back to first principles, you were to design a watch, a digital watch from first principles, from a design perspective, is this where you would land? And in my head, it's like, yeah, maybe, given the constraints of like manufacturing and price point, like this thing is incredibly cheap.
It's like $16, right? Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
It's really cheap.
And so I wonder, yeah, given all those constraints, this may be the most well-designed, well-engineered watch you could possibly make. Maybe.
Do you think that they have changed, like, internals or anything on it? Do you think they've revved things to make it cheaper as, like, and they must
have done something. Yeah, they must have.
Although I'm looking at this and it's like the back is like still Phillips screws with like a stamped metal thing, right? Like, that's not revved, probably. The materials are not fancy, right? Like, they're pretty, just like a TPU like thing, right? What's the backlight like? Is the backlight really bad? Like, is it 90s bad?
Yeah, it's cheaper.
Like, it hasn't been. I don't think that's been revised.
Like, it's not like a Timex, like, Indiglo style light, right?
No, it's just like a little LED off to the side.
Yeah.
So that, to me, feels like it's almost on purpose held back to... It can't be that that's the cheapest way to make this anymore. Like, I would guess that they're having to keep some technology alive or something... to like keep making this thing, right? They must be like keeping some, like, that process is not like, no one's making these LCD screens anymore, I don't think, right?
But they
like,
make all
so
of their own.
It's so easy and cheap to make an LCD screen. Like, wait, that's not that's trivial.
But the board is completely in-house.
Yeah, everything.
Like, everything.
Even the silicone, everything's I'm in-house. Sure is everything in-house. Is in-house. Yeah. Even the silicone that they print and put inside, like under the dot, the black goop, that's totally all in-house.
Yeah.
Really?
So that's, yeah.
Like,
so
man-made by Casio?
Yeah.
Yeah, the board, the electronics, all of it. So that's why I think it's like, yeah, I think they've just like kept that manufacturing line alive and it's just going.
Casio as a company seems somewhat unique in this regard. Like, don't they have keyboards and such that have the same kind of nostalgic quality where it's like, made this, you know, piano keyboard in the 80s and people still want it. And so we're still making it.
Right.
Like this watch, I don't think is the only Casio object that has this quality of, we're just going to keep making this unchanged for 50 years.
There's such a power in that. That's such a move. You know what I mean? To just be like, no, we're like done. Like, this is what it is.
This is it.
Like, we're not chasing any trends. It's like, we made this thing.
It's really good.
Like, even the graphic design hasn't changed any, even on the...
I wonder.
As far as
I can tell. I mean, they do have variants of it, right? Like, they have put out different models of it, like different straps, different, like, metal
the gold version. The business executive version with the link bracelet.
Which is such an awesome thing, by the way. It's such a move.
But none of that's necessary.
Yeah. So one thing that I found interesting is, so I don't have a relationship with this watch, but my first wristwatch as a child was something similar. It was a Timex Iron Man watch. And I looked it up on Wikipedia, and I was surprised to learn that the Iron Man actually predates this Casio. I kind of assumed that it was cribbing on the Casio design, but it's perhaps the other way around, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I had the Timex Iron Man also first. I had one that was like purple a little bit, but I also feel like that was,
right. And the Iron Man has evolved quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, it has changed many times.
Yeah. Over and over again.
Yeah. So one thing I remember about the Iron Man, I really liked it. Super cool watch from a kind of usability and user friendliness. It was a near nightmare because you're so constrained with the amount of buttons and what you can show on the display. So I never mastered like, I have to hold this button down instead of press it to do this. Or it's like, how do I change the time? It's daylight saving time. I need to, you know, change it an hour. How do I do that again? I have to press this button for longer than 3 seconds. Like, that was the UI, is all of these, like, almost like typing in a code in a video game, like these, get these buttons sequence right. And so is the Casio similar, or is it much simpler in its kind of usability?
It's very simple. Yeah. You're basically mode changing. That's all it's got.
Yeah, mode changing. It's one button to change the mode.
And then up and down?
That's kind of it.
There's three buttons.
Yeah.
Is it mode and then up and down, basically? Like increase, decrease?
No, it's cycle through. No decrease. Just mode. Yeah.
Mode. And then digit change.
Digit
for
change.
Setting,
but then also then like...
The other thing is, you guys have... Taylor, you mentioned that you have one disassembled, and you guys know intricately like what's going on inside of this. So, like, tell us about that. Like, it feels like Dan mentioned the like ties to terrorism, which I think it's like a timer for a bomb or whatever, right? So,
correct.
Why have you guys disassembled them, and why do people disassemble them? Like, is there some, does it send out signals really well or something, like on pinouts or something on it, or what's the deal?
Yeah, I wonder why. I actually don't know.
Yeah, I actually don't know why either. Like, yeah, I have no idea what that, like, 3 volt, what high voltage would be like a switch for them to go on that would then trigger a bomb to go off. I have no idea what that is, but I do. What would
it
be?
It's the PSO. So there's a, you know, this watch beeps.
Oh,
you know, so you can set a timer on it, and there's like, you know, you don't even have to hack it very much because there's a,
you can set a timer.
The piezoelectric
like your alarm
device is glued or taped to the back plate. So once you pop the movement out, there's actually like a little pin that's coming off of the back of the electronics that touches that back plate. So all you have to do is wire to that little pin that's hanging off of the back to get that high voltage when you want the signal. So it is. It's like very easy to hack if you want to just turn it into like a timer. That to trigger something else.
That makes sense.
But I think, you know, I also know that, like, yeah, maybe from reading that Wikipedia page a while ago, you know, it's kind of like a standard issue watch for terrorists, ISIS. So yeah, maybe it's just like they have a lot of them around. So
yeah,
you know, they're like, oh, we might as well just use this to do other things.
Use the tools at hand.
Yeah,
it reminds me of the Hilux? It's like the Toyota Hilux, where it's like the terrorist truck, right? Where it's like these like cheap, really like awesome trucks, and then that's just like what exists in places, and it's just like, yeah, we use this thing, and it's like become this symbol also for like militants and stuff, and it's like, well, why, first of all, why is it two Japanese companies? But also, there's just something. I would imagine that's true because of the same reason where it's like, we're going to make this, we think we figured it out, and we're just going to keep making this and not change it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we think about this in 50 years? Does this still exist? And is it even more powerful as a talisman 50 years from now? Oh. I would imagine it's got to be. If it still exists, it would just be so iconic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, it's already past the filter. Like, it's already past the point of like, this probably should not exist anymore. So
yeah.
Now that it does, yeah. It's like, all right, this has just reached indefinite status.
Yeah. I bet. Yeah. Now that I'm looking at it, I think the electronics does change. Like, I've seen ones where the goop is way smaller, sloppier.
Right?
No, just like sloppy. Like, it didn't have a rectangle around it. Sorry. We're looking at the back of the electronics. Mm. Where they do the, I don't know what you call it, where you put the silicon.
The ceiling or whatever.
Yeah, because they're, you know, they're like doping and putting transistor directly on the PCB. So there's no like, you know, they don't have enclosure. Packages. And that silicone or that goop, the resin that they put on, I've seen it be way sloppier.
I've seen it be smaller too, like a tiny little loop.
Yeah, so I think, electronics are improving and changing. So I wonder, like, 50 years from now, like, I would love to see them improve battery life. Like, it's already insane that this thing runs for 13 years. On...
It runs for 13 years on a one battery?
Yeah, coin cell.
My goodness.
And, you know, I don't know if coin cell batteries are going to improve. Likely not, because nobody complains about it enough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they could improve their energy consumption, and this thing could probably last way longer, which could be amazing.
I was just gonna say that's actually a nice transition to talking about the solid state watch, and if you wanted to explain to the listeners kind of what that's all about.
Explain
what is that all about. So solid state watch, the impetus of that project was like our love and appreciation for this clock, for this watch movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not the first group to kind of use the framework of the F91W sort of as like a starting point for some type of creative expression. There's this project, I think it was like 2012 I know that Toba Auerbach was on the project. I think it was her. She was part of a group called Dexter Sinister, who made this version of the F91W where they modified how they cycled the LCD.
Mm-hmm.
So it changed how you would be able to read the digits. So instead of showing all the digits, you know, continuously, they would cycle through them, I think, once a second. All the segments once a second.
Oh, uh-huh.
And you could kind of adjust that frame rate of cycling. You know, there's other hacks too. That have gotten into this. But our project Solid State Watch is essentially what we do is we take these movements, people order them, and they order them with whatever time zone they would like to have on their watch. And then we cast them permanently in resin, cast the movement permanently in resin. So there's no longer any functionality in terms of buttons that you can control or set your time. And so over time, this is sort of like the project is a way to highlight and celebrate how this thing, like how awesome and accurate this thing actually is. You know, everything else that we have, we're constantly trying to like adjust and change and tweak over time. But this, like you can actually, you buy it, you consent to the idea that, oh, it's going to eventually lose time or gain time and be off. But I actually know that when I go into it and I buy into that story when I purchase the thing. And it sort of becomes part of your life, like that whole cycle of a product degrading becomes part of the experience of actually wearing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had one on for many years now. Actually, this one is a newer one that's like 2 years old, but, you know, it's a minute and 15 seconds off. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of always know that my watch is a little bit slow. And that's
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
surprising these days how in sync everything is. You know, like your phone mm-hmm. relies yeah. on a mm-hmm. network to stay up to date time-wise, and your computer does. But that wasn't always the case. You know, like mm-hmm. 20 years ago, nothing really synchronized unless you told it to. Especially watches or like devices that we carried around. And so, yeah, it's interesting that we've quickly become accustomed to having everything be perfectly in sync, like down to the microsecond. And for, you know, this watch is kind of like a nice, gentle reminder that, hey, you know, like nothing is perfect. Like your Rolex watch is actually worse than this, mm-hmm. you know, $16 watch. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I like... You know, it wasn't our intention. Like, we knew that it would drift because you can't adjust the electronics or adjust the time. But it's like a nice side effect of casting it that you have to live with this piece of technology that you can't control, that you can't adjust, and you just mm-hmm. it's just going to count the way it wants to count.
Yeah, it's so beautiful, like, as an object, and it's such a cool idea. And you guys, how long have you been making these things? Is it like...
Ooh,
since, like... Years? Yeah, we stopped for a while because we, like, they would break, and we couldn't figure out how to fix how they were breaking. But then 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, we figured out a new way to make them, and... Yeah, I want to say it's like 2020. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so 4 years.
But yeah, it's such a cool thing. And it's so cool that like the brain of it is also this kind of like timeless. I think the fact that like if you guys would have designed your own movement or something, it wouldn't, there's something like so recognizable that the like LCD screen is this like it's like the same as this Casio thing, and it's like it reflects that. I think people get that, like culturally they sense that it's the same, but then it's like kind of in this space age clear case with this like cool strap and stuff, and so it's just really interesting that you're kind of like playing with this timeless brain. You're like encasing this like timeless object in this new wrapper, and it's just, I don't know, it's just really really nice.
I like to think about it too as just like physical. It's like a unit of material, you know, like all of a sudden the movement becomes just that. It's like,
yeah, like it's a screw, it's like a it's like a bolt or something,
or like
yeah.
a it's an billet ingredient. Of like yeah it's an ingredient that just like goes in to the thing.
Yeah, it's all, it's very very interesting. So do you guys buy these things in bulk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. There's like a supplier in California somewhere.
And you're buying the whole strap and everything, or just the like little?
We have to buy the whole thing, including the packaging that it comes in.
Yeah,
we've been afraid of asking Casio if we can.
It's like different.
I'm gonna say the next mission is to come up with a project that uses the empty cases and
just
some
the straps.
Way, so. we have. Yeah, yeah. We actually package them.
Yeah, people order them like. Because a lot of people like to play with them and like do projects with kids and stuff with them. So sometimes we drop them at our kids' school. People can just order them for free on our website and get them if they want to do a project.
Cool.
Yeah. Free Very products. Cool.
Yeah. Somebody wanted like 150 the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
Was there any consideration or research in doing the solid state watch into changing the battery or using a different battery or doing something to make this more of like a 50-year thing instead of a 13-year?
Sure.
Like, was that a no-go or what happened there?
It's very expensive, essentially.
Yeah.
Like one serious exploration we did was,
and we're still doing it. Like it's,
yeah, we may get there. It's hard. Like I think the technology is not there yet. The one, you know, we explored lots of different things, but the one that went the furthest was essentially to make this solar powered. So do a solar power, but then you can't, you don't want to use a battery because batteries wear out and also expand and have all kinds of problems on its own. So we were trying to do a thing where we use a solar power to charge up a giant bank of solid state capacitors, ceramic capacitors. So we tested that, but it like, is crazy expensive.
It's like 50 really just like, fancy,
you know, this whole PCB with just like so many tiny capacitors, and these are like very high end built to last forever capacitors that we could cast in, and it was just like not a reasonable thing to do.
I think it's reasonable. I think we'll do it.
Yeah,
maybe $500 watch.
Yeah, I think, yeah, but it's still on our shelf. We're still thinking about it. And it's one of those projects, I think, that will just, like, live on the shelf until the appropriate technology shows up.
And then we'll be like,
okay, we're ready to do it.
Yeah, well, so you guys, well, I think people will want to see. So if you get, if they go to CWANDT, like CWANDT.com, it's on, like, the homepage, like Solid State Watch. You'll, you'll find it there. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely worth looking at because it's, like, it's just cool. The like orange dot that covers up the date, right? Is that what it's covering up?
Yeah.
The,
yeah, the date. You can't
adjust. They don't adjust. They don't adjust for leap years, so.
Yeah, so we'll just get off.
The date will be off.
It's like really, really cool. So what about Dieter Rams? What do we think? What do we think Dieter Rams for this one?
Actually, let's do nitpicks before we
nitpicks. Jump the gun.
I have one.
Yeah, what's your nitpick?
Not so sure about the prominence of water resist WR on the face of the watch.
It's so true.
It seems like really they could just tell you that on the box and then you don't need to be reminded of that every time.
I didn't even realize it was.
Ours is truly water resistant, though. Like waterproof? I don't know which one's more.
Yeah, yours is, yeah.
But yeah, there's no way for water to get in.
That's so funny, Dan. I didn't even think about that.
It's just kind of invisible to you at this point.
Well, yeah, with these objects, everything recedes into the background. It's like a logo or something where it just like it becomes a symbol and then you don't consider it anymore.
It's totally an 80s thing where it's like the advertisement for the product is just built into the product itself. It's like, once I know it's water resistant, you don't have to keep telling me like I know, but you're reminded of that. Or in Taylor's case, it just kind of disappears. It could be, you know, it recedes into the background. That's kind of interesting.
WR. Yeah. that is really something. It really is something.
It's so interesting. And they also say on it, alarm chronograph. Chronograph?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I can buy the buttons are labeled. So you have light, mode, and alarm are kind of pointing to the buttons. So it's like, I can get behind that. But a lot of the other stuff is perhaps not needed to be permanently encased in the face.
Although, you know, I think the fact that the part number is on the front is like,
I like that.
The fact that it's now iconic is great. It's like, here's the name of it. Yeah. Here's it. Like, you know that. So that feels good. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just don't think you can change anything about something like this. It's become iconic. It's become like any changes make it worse because its value, it has mostly to do with like its like cultural status or whatever, and so start mucking with it, and it's just like you're messing stuff up.
Actually, there's another interesting thing for maybe listeners to check out. Like on our Discord, there's a channel dedicated to Solid State Watch, and on that channel, there's several people who have made their own versions of Solid State Watch using the F91W and actually some other like Timex movements too. And it's really cool seeing what, you know, everybody, it's like open enough or accessible enough that people can kind of take this as a starting point and then do whatever they want with it and make a functional watch that they want. And so it's really nice seeing like what people have done with it.
I like that, Taylor, of like, it's like a unit of material. It's like it's like an thing. It's like, oh, you want a watch brain? Here's a watch brain.
It's like cheap. $13 crazy like thing that lasts for 13 years. Yeah. Like gets a little worse, but like totally fine. I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. That's like very, very efficient. Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll only drift, I think it's like plus or minus 30 seconds per month. So that's like a minute a year.
But is it always in one direction or does it kind of ride this wave? And
I think it's usually in one direction, but I haven't tested that.
Wait, I would just 30 seconds a month?
Yeah. Or sorry, is it 30 seconds a month? So
it seems like a lot.
But maybe it does. Maybe it comes in and out, but like it's on a slow downtrend or something. Like it is going slower, but it's probably not like decrementing. It's 30 seconds every month. It's like it can drift that much, but the trend line is down or something. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
I don't know. Do you know if crystals tend to drift in the same amount? Like, I think if it's off,
dependent it's just on the. It's also temperature dependent.
Yeah.
So one interesting thing that I learned, I don't know where, is the Casio crystals on here are tuned to 35 degrees C, so like body temperature. Yeah. So it wants to be on a body to be perfectly tuned.
Yeah, that's cool.
Just the fact that it's like a crystal. You know, is also cool, right? It's this watch is powered by crystals.
Which is like, it's literally a tuning fork shaped crystal inside of
it. Oh, it's really a tuning fork?
Yeah. It's a tuning fork.
Like a tuning fork?
A crystal shaped
with
like
particles of gold.
Yeah, and they test it. And then they put gold on it to make sure it's at the right frequency, which is crazy.
Wait, they put gold on it to like weight to like. Yeah, that's how they. It's like those little rims on for bouncing a tire. They like put some gold stuff in there to like zhuzh it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Nobody gets to see the gold.
It's so cool. Yeah.
That is
humans. Cool. So cool.
It feels like Star Wars or something.
Yeah. Like crystal magic is real.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I believe it. It's cool. I believe it. I buy it. But is it good design unobtrusive? So what do you think, Taylor? What
good design is unobtrusive?
No, I just what are the of these 10 Deuterans principles? Which one lands the best?
I was gonna say long lasting. I feel like that's just, but Seiwei already said that for the other one. But it is long lasting. Okay. Like it's already proven itself to be long lasting. And so, yeah, I think that's the one that for sure sticks out for me the most.
I always wonder with these sort of things, like, is it culturally such an icon because it just is and it was always going to be that way? Or did the right things happen in culture or whatever for it to just like get noticed and like stay around and then it just kind of caught on and the culture has taken it and made it timeless? Or is it just inherently that way and it kind of would have been that way anyways? And it's like impossible to know, but it's always like a question of just like, you know, can you even do that? Like, is it possible? Like, is it like a combination of luck and like distribution or something that kind of makes something iconic? Cause it's like, it's like that logo thing where, you know, I know you guys must feel this way too, but after some time with something that we name something or put a logo on it or something, it's impossible to evaluate it again. It's like becomes it just neutralizes itself and you're just like, I guess it's fine. I think we made good decisions when we made the decisions, but it's like, I don't know. And it's like, can you even design something timeless on purpose, or like, is it really out of your control? You know, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just this interesting.
I think a lot of it is just sticking with it too. Like some level of conviction to be like, no, this is the right design and I'm not going to change it just because the world is trending a certain way. You know, and I feel that there's like certain things out in the world, another one I think of sometimes is like the IBM ThinkPad. It went through a period where it was like very not cool. Yeah. They just stuck it out. You know, they're like, we're just going to keep going with this while everybody else is like doing this other thing. And now it's like, oh, yeah, good thing they stuck it out. It's like, it's actually pretty cool now.
But it's like, so, in that case, and I guess in this Casio case too, like, was that intentional or was it some like hard nosed, like, we're not going to change because we don't have a budget, just like ignore it. And then it just kept going. Or was it an intentional conviction led, like, my sense is no. And actually both of those cases, like for this, for the Casio watch and for like, because the design of it, it doesn't seem like it was approached to be timeless when it was made. It's not like, it doesn't look like they were like, yeah, we're going to make a watch that's going to be around for 50 years. And, it's going to look like this. Like, that doesn't seem like what would happen if that was the intention. And so
I think they do think that way.
I don't know. I wonder.
No, I think they were like, we have the technology to get into the low price watch market right now in the same way that Timex has. Let's do that. Really? And let's make our thing.
I think just thinking about and looking at their other products like keyboards, G-Shock, like all these other things they make are also like, they're not changing.
Maybe it's a culture thing. Maybe it's Japan.
I think, yeah. So I think it's maybe that they just think on a different time scale. You know, so they're not thinking, maybe they're not thinking this is forever, but they're thinking, hey, when we put an effort into designing this thing, we're not planning to just run this for 1 year or 2 years. We're going to manufacture this for like 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so that kind of produces a different kind of approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I would be really curious, you know, like, it is true. I mean, like, if you think about Nintendo, like, Nintendo kind of exists out of time as well in a weird way, where it's like, we're doing it this way, and we're going to keep doing it this way, and, like, obviously, it's not exactly the same, but it's like, you can tell the attitude of Nintendo has stayed, you know what I mean? The, like, values or whatever, and...
Yeah,
and I wouldn't even say that about Apple exactly. I mean, definitely some of the values of Apple have changed, but the aesthetic feels not the same exactly, or something. I don't know. It's very interesting. It's a very interesting question, and no.
How do you guys feel about, you know, this is making me look at the face of it a little bit more and the design of the face of it, and then thinking about it in terms of like how we, all of us here, design like our packaging and design our products. You know, they, you know, you could look at this and say, like, you could evaluate it from a graphic design perspective and be like, I would never make something like that today that looks like this, but somehow it still functions and it's celebrated and it's really good. And like, it's kind of causing me to question, like, is our stuff like too nothing in order to sustain? Is it like too much of just nothing to like actually be a stance and a and an icon and a thing for the future?
You think it's not trendy enough, you're saying?
Not trendy. Trendy is the wrong word, but it's like too much of nothingness.
Too neutral. I think
to be something, you kind of need to be in style. Like this Casio watch graphic design face was in style at one point. Everybody was doing this and they just stuck with it.
Yeah, like if I, if so, if we're going to draw an icon of this thing, like with this outline sketch, like a really simple... What would this reduce to? Obviously, I think the like weird kind of curved chamfered like thing is absolutely critical. Like that is, and then this like rounded rack in it, like off center.
Yeah.
And then the buttons on the side, right? Like that is it. And that is obviously such a like 80s, 90s aesthetic thing. You could change, I think, a lot of the typography and colors, and it still works, but not in the same way. Like, when I look at these, like, blue ones or whatever that they also have, like, they are not as powerful as the black, like, this is it. You know what I mean?
Black, gold, silver, blue, red color palette?
Yeah.
Like, what is that color palette even?
This would be a really fun exercise for a graphic design student where it's like, redesign the face of this watch, but don't hurt its character. But, you know, attempt to kind of modernize it in some way. I would probably start with losing the border. Like, I would just drop the concentric circles. And
you mean the lines?
Keep all of the
like the race lines.
Yeah, the lines, like the blue, stripes. The white, and the blue, thick blue. Yeah, the race lines.
Have you seen the blacked out version?
No.
Yeah, I was about to say this. I'll put it in the chat right now because I was looking at it, and it does not. It loses everything. Well, I'm sending a link.
Yeah, it just looks like makes me Ooh. Sad.
It's bad.
Right?
It's bad. Yeah, it looks like really immediately it comes like cheap Star Wars 70s crap or something where it loses all of its presence. Yeah, it's really kind of like sad. It's obviously bad, right? It's just kind of thoughtless.
Clean face. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's like, has no charm.
Yeah. And then like it's using that space, like that area. I don't know, it like accentuates it in a really weird way. Because that area is also like we're hiding shit that like, we don't want you to look at.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. And it completely, no one would think it's a cultural, like nostalgic or anything anymore. Mm. Right? It doesn't even feel old. Exactly. It's like feels like bad, I think. Just bad. So it's like, yeah, it's like I wonder what could you take off and it not break? You know what I mean? Like what could you reduce? Maybe we would land on like literally nothing.
Yeah. I think it'd be such an interesting exercise. Yeah. I can imagine it's like, you know, like when these like sometimes graphic design firms will like redo a logo and they're just like changing the kerning and like do a little tweak and they're like, We're done.
We can't. It's like, let's change the... Yeah, it is so tricky. It's so tricky to take it out of... You could obviously make something that looks good, but I doubt it would have the same feeling of like, oh, this is like this nostalgic thing that's like old. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a good segue into... I picked good design as aesthetic for this thing because I think it just... is such a powerful vibe. It's like few things carry such vibe with them, right? And this is definitely one. Like, you know, I just like saw this picture of like Osama bin Laden wearing one. And it's just like, there's just something you could like recognize it from far away. It's like, right. I think that blue line around it really, even from far away, makes a huge difference. It does. One of the most vibey things. And, you know, the question in like in 20 years, like, will our kids, when they're adults, will it still carry weight? Like, will it still feel nostalgic or something? And maybe in a different way. And so, anyways, I just think the thing that makes this thing powerful is not the functionality or anything. I think it's like literally. What it looks like. I mean, of course, the fact that it's like really cheap and long lasting is remarkable, but that's not what people buy it for. I don't think really. I think they buy it for like the aesthetic. So that's my pick. Is like it's
really hard to get that much vibe for that little.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right? It's like one of the most vibe dense objects. It must be.
Yeah. It's also like a statement, right?
At this it really point, is.
Like if you're wearing that watch, you're trying to say something about yourself.
It's kind of cute. I went on like a Reddit forum last night about it, and like hearing people, people are like, "I got my first F91W." What do I wear with it? Like, you could tell it's like kind of like a nerdy, like,
oh yeah,
I don't know, child probably, but it's very cute.
No, I mean, it's I actually, you know, behind me, a couple of her employees are like in their 20s, and I'm actually really want to go in there and like at what they think of this watch. Like, what do they think of it? Because they don't have any, like, we are old enough to have like some cultural connection, like direct cultural connection to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure it's pretty similar, but I'd be really curious. Like,
yeah, the answer, by the way, of what you wear with it is a Adidas tracksuit.
Oh. Yes, correct.
I chose good design is honest for my pick, which I think is like kind of rare or special for like an 80s object, which I feel like there was a lot of it was an era of overpromising where it's like, let's make this seem flashy or can do more than it actually do. Whereas this watch seems to kind of keep the promises that it's making and not really claim it can do anything.
Yeah, it's like the instructions are literally on it. Right, like on the front.
Yeah, all the features. All the features too.
Water resistant. No, it's water resist. Let's be clear.
Yeah, water resist.
Was there ever one with like Japanese characters on this, or is it always? It must just be always like.
I've never seen one that's like that. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I like that take on it. Like, yeah, 80s stuff tended to, like, even from, like, a aesthetic point of view, like, I could imagine, I guess G-Shock is a little bit like that. You know, it's like, it has a lot of stuff on it, you know, a lot of extra stuff trying to promise a lot of things.
Well, but this does, too.
Yeah, I feel like my entire childhood is just getting things and being a little disappointed by what I thought they would do and what they actually did.
I mean, the doll doesn't actually poop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but I will say this watch, though, is it has the not it's not taken to the extreme of the G-Shock, but like it has elements of it that are kind of like posing. Or like a front, or like trying to be something, you know, like it's definitely reaching. And I think it's become neutral because it's just like nostalgic now. But I mean, it's definitely like, I think aesthetically it is trying for something, you know, for sure.
What's it trying for?
I think it's quite the choice to do this weird, like stretched out octagon thing and like, you know, obviously this water resist, they're like, it's so prominent, they must be really proud of that. They're like really trying to promise, right? So it's definitely, it's not restrained in any way, I wouldn't say.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if actually honesty and humility like need to be connected.
Interesting.
Those are kind of separate things, I think. Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, dang. What are these ones with these rainbow... Like, oh, it's like you put a gradient on it?
People are doing some weird stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. So is there a culture of people hacking these in general or like modding them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably a few thousand YouTube videos about how to mod them.
And does that mean make a different strap or put a different case? Or is it like, what is the modding extent?
A lot of them about changing the color of the display, you know, so you can change like the back of it. So instead of being this like silvery white, it's some other color. So it's kind of putting like a filter over the display all the way down to like messing with the electronics, you know, so there's a bunch of tutorials out there too on like how to mess with the electronics to make it say stuff. Some are really simple. Like, I think there's some like weird debug mode where you can make it say Casio. Just like
no, all but the time. That's just if you. Oh, all the time?
I don't know. Yeah,
there's some like if button. If you push all three buttons at the same time, we'll make it that's say how Casio. You can tell if it's a fake one or not.
Oh.
If you push all the buttons at the same time, it puts all of the everything on.
Oh, uh-huh.
You see that?
So there's like little hacks. All the way to like people building their own custom PCBs and then just repurposing the LCD to get it to do weird stuff.
There's also this one. If you hold this button for 3 seconds, it switches.
Casio with a little O, which is so cute. Yeah. You must be so proud of that. Hey, we did it.
Yeah. It's a good little Easter egg. So cute.
Oh, man. Great.
Yeah, it's cool that it's like become a platform, and I think with YouTube it's just like spread even more because now you can kind of like follow other people's tutorials and like learn how to do it. It's like a cheap entry point to, you know, modding watches.
There's also the open, there's an open source one where I think there's parts like a bill of materials and software that's available that it replaces the whole, like all of the electronics. Right, so it's a whole PCB, an open source PCB. LCD. Except for the LCD.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
May it live for forever.
Yeah. Thoroughly Considered is a joint production between Relay FM and Studio Neat. You can find out more about this episode by going to relay.fm/tc/109.